Welcome to Charting the Course, a podcast from Full Sail Capital, dedicated to providing you with insights, assurance, and confidence to grow and manage generational wealth. Full Sail Capital is a fiduciary registered investment advisor managing more than $1.5 billion with a focus on integrity, competency, and transparency.
Tyler and I are joined today by Scott Cravens. Scott is the Chief Operating Officer and a founding partner of Full Sail Capital. Scott has a diverse background, holding both a law degree and extensive experience in the commercial real estate sector. Tyler, why did we have him on?
Scott made a lot of sense for a couple of reasons. What we're doing is you and I are going to begin this series of conversations with a couple individuals, and even ideally, possibly a dad and a daughter. And we're going to discuss this idea of stewarding generational wealth. So we were talking before we started recording, but we're going to really talk to those people that are managing generational wealth, not necessarily creating it from the beginning. And Scott's got such a unique perspective on this from his personal story and his professional story. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I'm excited about it. I hope everybody enjoys it. I think it's going to be really beneficial as we get this thing rolled out.
I know you'll enjoy our conversation and hope it serves you along your journey. Scott, thanks so much for coming by today. The two items in your office that stand out the most to me, at least, are the well-worn Coast Guard flag that's on your wall and the Brody chair that is filled with real estate documents of all kinds. There's land development, architecture drawings, lease agreements. Are these two items connected in any way?
They're not connected in any way, but I'm not surprised you would notice the Coast Guard flag with your background in the military.
Right.
Thanks for your service, by the way.
My pleasure.
The Brody chair, I'm a little bit more surprised you took an interest in. They're not connected. The flag is in a frame with a picture of my paternal grandfather who served the Coast Guard in World War II. And he was on the USS Spencer, which was a Coast Guard cutter that guided supply ships across the Atlantic. And that flag is from the ship. The USS Spencer sunk a U-boat in World War II while it was guiding supplies. So it's got kind of a cool history. But that flag was given to me by my paternal grandmother as a gift. And I keep it in my office as a reminder for two things. One is that people in my family have had to make sacrifices that I didn't have to make. Mm. So they sacrificed for me so that I could live the life I have. And the other thing it reminds me of is that everybody has a role to play in times of strife or war. My grandfather wasn't on the beach in Normandy. He didn't get on the Pacific. You know, he didn't land. I mean, but he did his part. And I think that's a good lesson. It reminds me a lot of times to do my part. The Brody chair, less dramatically, I bought it because I wanted it to be my reading chair.
Yeah.
And that was aspirational in nature. And what's happened to it is it's become a repository for all the stuff I don't know where to put it. So that's things like building plans and documents and things I need to read, but it's just holding them until I can read them later. My office is full of things, though, like the flag, that some of them you wouldn't know by looking at them, that were given to me by family or they represent some part of my family. And I surround myself in that because I think it's a good reminder every day while I'm working, what I'm working for and how I got where I am. It's always a good reminder. So that's why I keep that stuff in my office.
So you mentioned roles, and I'm going to come back to that. But without any nuance, I feel like people can create generational wealth, they can steward and grow it, or finally, they can consume and destroy it. Obviously, there's overlap between those areas, but what role do you see yourself playing in that very simplified structure?
So I am the beneficiary of generational wealth that was created by my maternal grandfather. He had an eighth grade education. He served the country in Korea. He started a company called Origiquip Automotive in the 1950s. Which he sold in 1967. And my experience with that has led me to be really introspective about issues surrounding that. So I think you've narrowed that focus pretty well. You either believe that you have some entitlement to your wealth, or you believe that you have some responsibility to it.
Mm.
And responsibility is a word you can change. It's interchangeable or synonymous, in my view, with stewardship. And so you take one of those two paths. You believe that you're a steward or you believe that you're entitled. I think for folks who are the beneficiaries of generational wealth, the first thing you have to have is the humility to admit it and acknowledge that that's true. Otherwise, you will consume it.
So I am not the beneficiary of financial generational wealth, I would say. My parents have definitely gifted me things. But I think that there is a narrative for those of us who are not beneficiaries that, oh, that's just an easy job and that's just the life, if you will. What challenges are there that I just may not be aware of that you face, and it's not all roses, I would imagine?
Yeah, well, I mean, a couple things. I'm always happy to admit and acknowledge again that I started out ahead of where a lot of people do because of the work somebody else did. The difference between me and a lot of people I've come into contact with over the years is that I don't take that for granted and I'm not afraid to admit it. But my grandfather is not responsible for my success. He just helped lay the foundation for it. And I think where he generated his wealth was in real estate. My family still owns real estate today. We invest actively. Today, I own more real estate assets that I purchased than what he had anything to do with, but he gave me the skills to be able to do it. And I think as I walk through every day, it's kind of like having things in my office that remind me of my family. I have a picture of him on my desk because everything I'm doing that day ultimately is because of the things he did when he was in his career and working and building, right? That's just my way of paying homage.
And the other thing that's in your office is a picture of your kids and your wife.
That's right.
And so I think the other thing that I grow to appreciate about people like you is you value the past and respect the past while also working hard and working to prepare the future and give them the ability to continue to build off the legacy that your grandfather started. And we're going to get into that a little bit, but I know that's where a disconnect starts happening is between these generations. If the approach is not taken or the mindset's not made up where you are going to honor the past, it goes away.
That's exactly right. The more touch you lose with the legacy of that, again, what is unique for me is that I had the benefit of my grandfather telling me, showing me, my mother telling me and showing me all the things that not only he did, but his parents did to put him in the position that he found himself in. And when you trace that back, if that doesn't humble you and it doesn't make you appreciate where you are, I can't. That's a character problem.
I want to hear more about how you've handled it well, and both personally and seen clients do it. But how have you seen it handled poorly? The cliche is shirt sleeve to shirt sleeve in three generations. The statistics support it. 70% of inherited wealth consumed in one generation, 90% by the third. And you are on the correct side of those stats. But how have you seen people handle it poorly?
So I've known that statistic since I was 18 years old. And the numbers are usually a little different, 67, 70. But I've known that statistic, and I've thought very carefully about how I will tell my 20-something-year-old daughter, which seems that would be the age-appropriate time, mm-hmm. to tell her that there is no statistic for you. You are doomed to fail, and if that doesn't motivate you, well, that will fall to me. That would be my mistake. But hopefully she has the character to take that on, because I take that as a charge, right? If 90% mm-hmm. of people are going to fail, I refuse to be in that 90% under all costs. What I see people fail in is going back to the legacy or the entitlement. You have to, as a wealth transferor, you have to connect people to what created the money, because that's where the story is. That's where the legacy is. And that's what people respect. People don't respect money. They spend money, mm-hmm. but they respect legacy. They respect service.
That's good.
And that's what you have to connect people to. Well, the further you get away from the wealth creator, the less you know that story. And that's true primarily for families whose wealth isn't, you know, widely known. So you think about these, you know, long-standing families, everybody knows their name, Rockefeller, right?
Yep.
These types of folks, their stories are well known, so they're always connected. But the average person just finds out that they have $5 million or whatever, but they don't know how it got created. Somebody worked really hard yep. for that. They scrapped their way through life to put that together.
And I think we have a lot of stories like that in Oklahoma City.
We do have
a lot of our clients have a story like that. And so it's really unique when you're able to sit down with them, or it's one of our advisors is able to sit down with them. And I see that more often than not.
I agree. And I know this is an aside, but those are the people that I love to work
Absolutely.
For. Because I take their wealth as personally as I do. Those are the people you want to get in the foxhole with and fight with, you know?
You've talked a lot about entitlement and responsibility. What role does age, maturity, experience, personality, I feel like there are just some human factors that some people may say, oh, well, yeah, that's just really easy for you because you're wired that way.
I don't think that's true. I think it comes down to humility and introspective thinking. I think you have to be willing to admit how you got where you got, where you are, all the things that contribute to you not getting there, and then introspective enough to stop and think through them. That's part of why I encourage my clients with their kids at age-appropriate levels to talk about their wealth. I'm not saying my oldest daughter's 10. I'm not going to set her down and say, hey, here's all the real estate we own, and let's drive around and let me tell you how much money it makes.
You're not talking about lease stacks with her?
Yeah, I'm not talking about lease stacking with her. Not just yet. We'll get there. But yeah, I think you've got to be willing to talk about it at age-appropriate levels and help them understand all those pieces. But that enables somebody to step back themselves and be introspective.
What role do you see third parties, and obviously kind of leading question here with the world that we work in, but how can advisors help facilitate those conversations?
By being a good accountability partner, by encouraging their clients to talk about it. And what I've seen is the older the client is, the less they want to talk about money. That is definitely a generational thing. But there are still young people, I say young people, people who've created wealth that are in their 40s and stuff that I don't think are having the right conversations with their family. And I think the advisor's job is to encourage that. All I can do in my role is give them my experience as being somebody who inherited and then who is ultimately going to be a transferor, because I, again, will not be in that 90% under any circumstance that fails to transfer. But I think that's a big part of our role as advisors.
So one of the stories that I've heard you share is of a friend, I may get the details wrong here, but whenever he was in college, his father unexpectedly passed away and he put his life insurance payout in a 20-year lockup account. So that way, because he was afraid that the 20-year-old college version of himself was going to waste that money.
It's true.
Can you talk about the impact of that story?
Introspection and humility. Give the guy credit for that money scared him, and he put it in an irrevocable trust himself until he would turn 40. And I think if he went back and did it again, maybe he would have done it a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're 20 and you're afraid you're going to spend it, having the ability to recognize that and change so you didn't, that's pretty impressive. It's the only story I've ever heard like that.
How have you seen, it sounds like you have handled it well. Have you seen other clients who have handled that wealth transfer and kind of generational responsibility particularly well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I have clients and friends that are wealth inheritors that I have deep admiration for the way that they conduct themselves and the way that they retain and protect their family's legacy, which again is more important than the money. They are, sort of character leaders for me and people that I look to as I try to introspectively build my own values and make sure that I'm living those out on a daily basis. There's lots of people who have done it well.
What kind of tools have you seen help with regards to maintaining that legacy and keeping it transferred?
I am a believer that the biggest key to that is, again, retaining a connection to what it took. So let me give you an example that's personal. There will be a point when my kids are pretty young still, say 16 or 17. I'm going to drive them to 2716 South Central Avenue in Oklahoma City. And that's where Scott Seat Covers got started. And that was my great-grandparents' business. That building today is not much to look at. But that's where the root of a Ridgequip started, right? Which led to real estate and all that. Seeing that as a reminder that you don't start where you are. Your story starts many, many, many years before you played a role in that movie or that story. And getting connected to that history is a really important part of helping the next generation understand their obligation to it. If my girls can see my grandfather's Coast Guard flag, or they can see my other grandfather's original business location, and they can understand, if I can help them understand that those sacrifices got us to where we are and led them to where they are today, there's a far greater chance that they're willing to take that legacy and carry it forward than if all of a sudden someone just says, hey, good news, here's some money. Because what do you do with money? You spend it. That's what people do with money by their nature, unless they live out values differently. I think the other thing that people do and that my family's done and I encourage clients to do, write down your values. Write down a mission statement for your family as a whole. Sit down with your spouse and write an immediate family mission statement for your family and your children. And write down your goals as a family financially. and write down the values that you stand for. And I actually, when we did it, we wrote down the values we don't stand for, things that we don't want to be guilty of. And we go through those things when we make decisions as a family. I constantly in my head and on paper review that list.
Remember the book Good to Great of the stop doing this rules.
Mm-hmm. That's right. No, that's exactly right. So it just helps keep you a bit more grounded when you think about it in those terms, I think. You have to admit, again, being willing to be humble and introspective, if you're willing to violate a tenet or a value you say you don't stand for, I don't know what that says about you.
Yeah.
Little bit of a self-serving question here as the dad of girls as well. Do you think there's any difference with regards to preparing your daughters versus if they had potentially been sons? And again, I know there's an incredibly loaded question.
But it's a great question.
But I'm curious again, just I ask you because you are so introspective, and I'd be willing to bet you've thought through this.
I've thought about it a lot. My mother, who is sort of a product of her generation, you know, my grandfather was a great grandfather to me. But he was not a great girl dad, right? Mm-hmm. To her, women of that generation were, you know, quote unquote, you know, they were kept. You know, they weren't supposed to work. They can't have goals. And I think that affected my mother in a way that it bothers me to my core. So when my girls walk through the living room, they better check for my foot because I'm going to try and trip them when they walk by, right? And I hold them to the same standard that I was held to. And one of the things I always tell story-wise was that, you know, people say, well, how'd you get started in the real estate business? I say, I'm picking up cigarette butts in parking lots, you know, because that's what my granddad made me do. Well, I mean, my girls go out on Saturday and scoop dog poop out of the backyard. There's no job you're not, you know, you're too good for, right? Get out there and get it done. I think things are different now because there's a recognition that professionally speaking, women aren't equal. They are superior. In a lot of respects, they're superior.
There are no women in this room. We are coming up with this on our own.
It's true.
Just so everybody knows.
It's true.
And I agree with Scott.
But I tell my daughters every day, I feel sorry for the boys in their school and their teachers because I always say, you know, Logan, who's 7, my youngest daughter, I'll say, sweetie, what's the difference between boys and girls? And she said, girls are smarter than boys. I'm like, that's right. Now go to school. You know, like I wanted that to have that level of confidence that I was given as a male in my generation. Like they need that. That's just a difference in the time we live in today. And they've got to be prepared to be successful in their own right. That means they got to learn how to struggle and do things they don't want to do and all that stuff.
I appreciate you sharing that. I know you need to get back to work, but if you would share one story about each of your grandfathers, if you would, that you can remember and feel comfortable sharing here.
Sure. My paternal grandfather, they lived over by Lake Hefner, so Lake Hefner Golf Course, and I would go over to their house almost every Saturday, especially not in the summer when it was lake season, but he would come and pick me up and take me over to Lake Hefner and drive me around the golf course and spend a ton of time with me. And I think I learned a lot from his middle class, you know, sort of life and lifestyle and how to find happiness no matter where you are or what you have, just with the people that you love. We never even played golf. We just drove around in the golf cart and talked about all the things that kids and grandpas talk about, you know, and he just lived a very satisfied life. And that was attributable to his values that stuck with me. For my maternal grandfather, you know, the story I always tell, if I'm going to tell one, is he had a Ridgequip Automotive. And the short story of that company was that he manufactured vinyl tops for cars. And he had contracts with automakers to make these aftermarket vinyl tops. They'd be delivered to the dealer like an incomplete vehicle, and then they would install the tops. And I have a letter that was written by my grandfather to his attorney. And how I got it back was, I found it in some documents in our family office after he died years and years ago. Anyway, and the letter basically says, thank you for your letter dated such and such. You know, I value your opinion and counsel a great deal, and I appreciate your concern for my decision to sell the business. And I know we're doing great and it might seem strange, but it is imperative that I sell this company before people realize how silly it is to put a vinyl top on a car. And I think about that all the time. For someone who had an eighth grade education to have that kind of vision for not only his business, but the humility and the introspection to understand that it, despite all the things he'll do to make it successful, sometimes things have a lifespan and you got to be smart enough to know when to get in and get out. And he saw it and he got out before people realized how silly it was to put a vinyl top on a car.
Along those lines, I think it's time for us to get out as well. Thanks, Scott.
You bet. Thanks, you guys.
Scott.
If you enjoyed today's conversation, please review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week. All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.